Welcome to the new day, my fellow thinkers. I'm coming to you from drizzly, grizzly Buffalo, New York, and I am your host, Logan Eldine Misseldine, and these are today's Polis Thoughts. Okay, everybody, so behind a week again, just trying to get everything put together last week. I just did not have enough time to even record. We planned a trip to Salem, Massachusetts months ago, and so me, my wife, and one of our couple friends, and our sweet little doggo, traversed the 7 hours plus from here to Salem, and we had a great, fantastic time. I think that I'll have a recap of that, I think I'll type that one up for the blog, but. No, we had a ton of fun. It was amazing. It was perfect fall weather, murky for most of the days, sunny when it needed to be, and you know, just chilly enough. And we saw just about everything. We didn't pay too much for tours or anything, but we saw everything that we wanted to see. And even went on a hike, you know, if you pay attention to... if you watch my story and I'm watching the Instagram, that you can see everything that we basically did pretty much. But no, we had a blast and had some really good times, and you know, I had a really fantastic drive on the way back. Fantastic. We overspent and needed to avoid tolls, and so we took the tollless roads, and we ended up going north first through Vermont, and then over west to back to New York. And just it was the most fantastic surprise that I've had in a while with an adventure. I didn't expect to go to Vermont and drive through it. Oh, excuse me, I'm like really tired today. But me and my wife, we've been talking and surmising and looking, and in the next decade or so, we really, really want to move to Vermont, and we've been thinking about it and praying about it and just formalizing it. It just feels like the right place. And so we've been meaning to make a trip out there just to look around and see what's the lowdown with it. And so this was a complete surprise to us. We took the road and all of a sudden we realized driving and we seeing signs for Vermont, and we're like, oh no, we're going in. And it, to me, it felt like I was transported to Narnia. I was put in and just looked around, and just from the kind of the more flat New England forest of Massachusetts, just to this hilly and almost mountainous, just everything in Vermont, just everything was so gorgeous, and the fall colors were changing and everything just fit right. It honestly, to me, it was like every single little part of a area or habitat or environment that I've fallen in love with, whether it's like a little stream or whether it's a mountainscape or whether it's a type of tree or type of forest or type of rock formation. It just seemed that every single one of those that I've always fallen in love with and looked for on my adventures was picked up and placed right into Vermont, and just it's all there. It's all there. This tiny little New England state, just all there. And just it was just gorgeous. Me and my wife, we were just awestruck, and just mouths gaped open, just looking left and right, just watching everything unfold before us. And we were just so impressed with it. And it was just so nice, and such a nice, relaxing vacation, a nice little treat on the way home. But yeah, that was Salem, basically. And then other than that, I'm finally going to be moving back to first shift in my job, so I'll have more time in the evening to actually do things. So you guys are going to see a lot more content and a lot better content. So that's fantastic for me. Other than that, got some more hunting trips planned up. I might be camping again, so you guys are going to see some good content based off of that. Try to get some good pictures of that. No, and then other than that, that's all the adventures I've got planned out. It just, you know, other than some more book reviews, more movie reviews. You know, I've been recommending a lot, and Halloween's on becoming, so y'all better get ready for that. But yeah, no, and it may seem weird that most of my stuff on the Instagram and the blog and stuff has to do with things of the outdoors adventure, outdoors nature, but the podcast, I believe, more to be an oral translation of those things. But on top of that as well, because the way that we communicate through everything else isn't, you know, all these other types of adventures of the mind, adventures in film, adventures in literature. And I don't just mean adventurous tales. I just mean the exploration of that, the finding in the deeper meanings, the reading between the lines and delving deep into the trails that are set before us by authors and directors and things like that, and musicians. So,
oh, excuse me, sorry, everybody. So, if
anyone's kind of confused about that, that's more where I'm taking this podcast. This is more the adventure of the other essences of life. In the Instagram and the blog, you're going to see more of the physical natures and the other types of adventure, as well as represent and little recommendations that represent what's going on in the podcast. But so I will. Most of the stuff that I like does usually have a sense of adventure, or at least a part of it in there. But you can really take anything and put it into an adventure, because this is life. And, you know, we might just be sedentary more likely, but there's so many other things that, like, you know, if you take a walk and find something, that was an adventure in itself. You get lost, you know, it happens. It's not altogether gone yet. Until we live in, like, the Wall-E world, we're all in chairs that transport everywhere, but I doubt that'll happen. I'd really hate for that to happen, but enough about me. So this is part one of my adventurous interpretation of Watership Down, which was a book written by Richard Adams, who died recently, written in the 19... Let me look at the copyright real quick. It was written in the 1970s. 1972 is the copyright. It was published in 1972. I shouldn't say written. It follows along the story of British rabbits, but not anthropomorphic rabbits, more of personified rabbits. So their physiology and their biology and their habitat and all that and stuff is from, like, a realistic point of view, where humans are still here, or humans are the thing, and then, like, are the ones that, you know, are anthropomorphized, so to speak, in that sense. And so we're just following not a stream of consciousness, but actually dialogue and such, like actual personalities within these rabbits. So not like something like Jack Wilde, not Jack Wilde, what was his name? So it's something like Call of the Wild or White Fang, not like that, but just the actually given personalities, actually given names and identities. And so to help better kind of get a viewpoint of how, the author cites a definitive work of rabbits. I think that's what something like that's called, that was written a while ago. That is very, very scientific, very factually based, very off the behavior of rabbits and their life cycles. So he takes that and puts it into a form of a tale, including folklore and including culture and near religion to these rabbits, which is really fascinating. And I'm sure that's why it's a classic and a beloved, well, children's tale, but. I chose this because it's kind of gotten a mix where it's an adventure tale. I mean, you're following along the life of a real rabbit. Everything wants to eat the rabbit. Like, everything they have is an adventure. It's crazy. Like, if they make one wrong move, they die. So everything they do has to be based off of certain decisions of the right way to go. And so, but because he puts it into he does not put it into a stream of consciousness thing where it's just purely animal acting off instincts that are outside of our own, he takes all the things and actions and rationalizations that they may have and puts it into a very human-like way for us to understand. And with that, it can lead into his interpretation. And we can take some of these actions and you can basically make a theme out of it that isn't just rabbits live and rabbits die. You know, you can actually take something that we can put into our own life and rationalize our own selves and take lessons from this. And so that's what I really wanted to do with this. And so it's not a very big book. It's only about 400, well, almost 500 pages, which isn't too terribly large. It's not, it's a novel, but I read much quicker. But the only reason I'm doing this in segmented parts is because I have a full-time job and I'm trying to decipher the happenings of this as I go along as well. So that takes some time. But I'm literally going through part one. I don't know how many parts there are, but I've finished off part one right now. And I've read this book before. It was a handful of years ago before I even got married. So I wanted to reread it and get a fresh perspective on it. So I'm going to give you guys a little short little thing while I gather my thoughts again, and then I'm going to dip into this. So thanks for sticking along, everybody. I hope you guys enjoy this, and love some feedback if you guys didn't or do. So I'll be back in a moment, everybody. Alrighty, so I've already explained a little bit about what Watership Down is, but I'm going to go over a summary of what's happened so far in this first thing. So this is total spoiler alert. Like, if you wanted to read this book, if you've ever wanted to read this book, or you are interested in now that I've explained it, shut this down. Go read it first. At least the first part, and then you can come back. Unless you are fine with spoilers, but I'm gonna go in depth. So this isn't like just, oh, you know, I liked how this worked, and this is the light review. This is a light recommendation. No, this is like I'm going in deep. I'm putting a theme to you all to interpret what happens in this tale. So I'm gonna go over summary first, and then I'll go over what theme I want to do. So in the very beginning, we're introduced to two characters, the two main characters, which are Hazel and Fiver. Hazel and Fiver are brothers. Fiver is the runt, whereas Hazel is a bit just older and just a more average-sized rabbit. And so they're outliers in their home warren, which is the group of rabbits. And this is British rabbits, so they don't act like this in America as much. But so before anyone rips me apart, this isn't how rabbits are. Like, this is British, so they're different over there. But sorry. So they're younger, they're more outcast, they're not in the inner circle, so to speak, because they're not the largest or the most clever at this point in their lives. So we follow them, and they're living their life doing their own thing. Yet Fiver, because of his small stature, he's more sensitive to things like premonitions and visions and things like that. He's a very intuitive person, whereas Hazel's a very good leader. I'm going to introduce these characters best I can. I'm not going to go over every single one of them. Just the ones that kind of that are in the events here and there. So try to keep along. I'll try to keep you guys up to speed too. So very first thing is that, and so a little premonition here. They go to a part of the outer edge of the warren to find some food, to find some little tasty treats, because that's just what rabbits do. And so they see a notice board, and yet they can't read what's happening. The notice board was put there by men earlier that day, saying that the land was about to be cultivated into into whatever. It was either apartments or whatever. It's about to be what is the word I'm looking for? Converted or whatever. And so Fiver, being so intuitive and in tune with, I guess, prophecy, he is overcome physically with fear and shouting out a premonition of what's going to happen. He sees the vision of just blood filling up the field and the warren and things. So yeah, he knows that it's no longer a safe place to be. And so they go, and then we encounter the next character, main character, Bigwig, who is one of the inner circle, kind of a soldier-esque thing. And so we encounter him. He allows them to go in to meet with the chief rabbit, who brushes them off, Eileen. And so Hazel, trusting Fiver's intuition, he organizes Bigwig and several other rabbits, including a smaller runt named Pimpkin, a storyteller named Dandelion, and then I believe another one of soldier rabbit named Blackberry, and a handful of others, and they end up leaving. And so they leave well in the night, and it's terrifying. They're on their own. They're in the open. They're hearing enemies left and right. People think they want to eat them, and they stop at one point, and they run into a badger, which did not harm them, but they moved on anyway. And so they end up taking some refuge near a creek, and they need to get across because they can see that there's a field and across, and but yeah, they're taking their time and trying to figure out how to cross. And then a dog starts either hunting them or just starts coming down the way, and so they hear it and it puts some pressure onto them. And so and this is one of the first times they show some sort of cunning or like above average cunning, where one of the rabbits comes with the idea that the smaller ones that can't swim should jump up onto a board, and then Bigwig, one the largest rabbit they have, can push them across. And so because they're rabbits and they're not very intelligent, this takes a second for them to process, but they get through it. And so only a few of the more clever ones remember that. And I know this might seem weird, but this is an important thing I'm going to be bringing up. And so then they meet up across a field of some sort of plant that they can't eat, but gives them shelter for a little while. And then I'm running through the and so they come across the field again, and they come across an area that they feel safe enough to start digging, and then a mysterious rabbit shows up. And so rabbits are very territorial, and they can be very aggressive, and so it puts everyone on edge. And then they approach this rabbit, and he's completely different. He's very weird. He has a different demeanor, and he's a much larger size, but he's not very aggressive either, which is strange for rabbits, because mostly the larger ones are much more aggressive. They're very healthy compared to these travelers, our main characters. And so he invites them to their warren without a fight, which is also strange and uncommon. So they're a little bit on edge, but they go in there and learn that it's a very safe. They go to the warren of these new rabbits and learn that it's a very safe place. It's very, or appears to be a very safe place. It appears to be, you know, it's a very large, dry, comfortable warren, or which is a underground tunnels and dwelling of rabbits. But yet, strangely, there's only so many rabbits, and yet, because we all know rabbits like to get their hinky-pinky on, there should be a lot more, and so it's very curious to them, but they ignore this, and some of the strange customs and behaviors that these rabbits have. Because they learn that, yeah, this is, even though it should be a terrifying thing that a man has infiltrated the area frequently, but the man leaves food for them at a certain point, and that they can bring back into their warren. And so they've learned to trust this man. They've learned to trust this area as being safe. There's not a lot of enemies. There's not a lot of death due to stoats or foxes or owls even. And so Fiver, using his intuition and having just these deep, dark feelings, can hardly stay in the warren and is begging everybody to leave, and no one wants to because it's one of the easiest, cushiest places they've had. And it takes Bigwig being caught in a snare to wake everybody up and to understand that the rabbits themselves understand that the farmer is literally culling and farming them, and using snares to catch them. And unlike real rabbits or normal rabbits, they're apathetic to that point and just living their own life and trying to justify themselves through some events that I'll talk about. And so it takes them. And then, so at the very end, and this is the very end of part one, Fiver and Hazel instruct them that they need to go to the hills, which they can see. And so, which is a very hard, long, and, a hard, long journey ahead of them, and they know that right now. So that's where we're at right now. That's basically everything that's happened. And so I've taken some notes, but I'm going to be kind of going on a whim because I have read this just so recently. This might be a little bit rough. So the theme that I'm going to want to talk about this in is purely just... And so the theme with this book that I'm going to be doing a lot of book reviews, I'm going to be translating this through a theme of adventure. So what aspect of adventure can I interpret these events into, and how, and yet it may seem just adventurous, something that we can take along and something we can recognize in our outdoor adventures or our vacation adventures or things that, you know, we go outside of our way, but we can also translate those into our own lives and our own lives and, you know, even places that we work, places that we live, and things at home and ambitions that we have and adventures of business and things that we can do. So that's where I'm going with this. And so with this adventurous interpretation, and this may translate into the other parts of the book, because this is the one that I've chosen is pretty prevalent and it's pretty overlaying and basic, not basic, but very, very broad. It's a very broad one, but, I will dig deeper as I feel I need to, but this one, so the theme that I have chosen for this part of the interpretation is intuition. And so there's a bunch of other little, like underlying themes like fellowship, prophecy and truth, you know, and things like that. But, you know, I think intuition is very strong, especially within the context of this story. And I know I've really beaten your brains that Fiver has intuition. This is his thing. But this is something I can really go out and talk about more. You know, it's like prophecy and truth. They have this subtle power that... oh, crap. I can't even read my notes here. I don't want... You know...
Hold on, everybody. Holy crap. I'm trying to read from my notes and I can't even read them. I wrote this like at midnight. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay, so it's interesting because intuition and pride kind of go hand in hand in a weird way, because oftentimes the people that have leadership roles, people that have, you know, especially positions of power, no matter how big or small, we see this all the time, that they can develop a very strong sense of pride, and that they feel like that they're, because they've had success in so many ways, real success or not, or they can take credit for a lot of things that have been successful around them, that they develop a kind of sense of pride and feel that their own intuition or their own, what they believe to be intuition, is completely right. And so we see this in this book with the Chief Rabbit, the original Chief Rabbit, where he just brushes them off idly and politely and then berates Bigwig himself for even letting them come through, because this is not the way, his way. Like, how could you be this way? But yet we take Fiverr. And so this is, you know, and a lot of times we see it, in plenty of examples in movies and in literature, including this one, that the outliers of society, the outcasts, often have more of an intuitive scale because they lack pride. They have nothing else to fight for and they have nothing else to really hold in themselves. So why on earth would they be lying about, you know, a feeling that they've had? So sometimes it's they're very introspective. They have more time to think and have more decisions, because no one trusts them anyway. They can find through their mistakes on their own and stuff. And no, this doesn't always work, but a lot of times that's where we see, especially in literature and things like that, where that's where more of the intuition comes. You know, it's you know, the power of an individual's talents or slash intuition, so to speak, can be best summed up into this quote I took from the book. It says, whenever they catch you, they will kill you. But first they must catch you, digger, listener, runner, be cunning and full of tricks, and your people shall never be destroyed. So this quote is from a story that was told about the original rabbit, the original Chief Rabbit, Elariha, I think that's how you pronounce it. And so the god of their culture told him that when they, in the creation story of how rabbits became to be. And I really liked that quote, is because like in the story, like, our strengths and advantages are tempered with a balance of trials and negative personality aspects, you know, like, especially taking this in this context where, Bigwig, you know, he couldn't really fight through uncertainty well, you know, while he's being strong, courageous. Like, if something didn't seem 100% like there, if a decision, you know, was a wishy-washy, or it's like, if he couldn't really make a good decision based off what was being presented, he kind of faltered, and, you know, some of his more negative aspects showed up. But yet, you know, him being so strong and courageous, when things were very sure, he could strongly lead into people and point them in the right direction and take action. You know, Fiverr and his, timidness, you know, is paired with foresight and things like that. You know, these things, you know, allowed, you know, and similar things in our own life allow us to lead and be led, you know, in real life. You know, I think especially a good example of this would be Hazel. Hazel's probably the best example of how this tempering of I guess gift and vice is represented, because he is the leader of this Warren, but yet it's not like Bigwig, where he just assumed it. He took his weaknesses and paired them with other people's strengths, and he did this naturally. So a lot of times some people can do this naturally. Other people have to really learn it. And I've had to learn a lot of things like this myself in times in scouts and such. So Hazel, because his certainty and his lack of timidness, he paired off with Fiverr extremely well, because he was able to stand up for Fiverr. He was able to stand up for his little brother. He was able to bring what Fiverr was trying to tell everybody and bring it into light and with credibility. And so some of the rabbits, because they knew of Hazel, they came to join him because they knew Hazel to be very, knew this naturally, that he had this natural gift. Whereas, you know, Hazel in his own mind kind of compared himself to Bigwig, thinking that Bigwig would try to be on as the leader. Whereas subconsciously, we can see that Bigwig really trusts in Hazel and understands his own shortcomings. And so it's really seen that where, you know, Bigwig's weaknesses lay, Hazel's strengths really come out. And so you know, the main leaders of our little circles, you know, may not love all of the answers, or have not love, sorry, have all the answers, but like, you know, like I said, like Hazel has no idea what, you know, Blackberry's cleverness was, but he was able to trust it. And so like, I'm just saying, I'm kind of repeating myself here. I tend to do that. But the other example was that, you know, especially, and this may seem more like leadership, you know, than it, but it's all about intuition. So like, at least in this first part of my interpretation, that, you know, looking at Hazel and his leadership, he, you know, especially when they were faced with the not only the dog, but with crossing the river and such, Blackberry and I believe Fiverr were the only ones that could really understand that of the raft idea. The rest of them were just so confused and flustered and just trying to go ahead and such. And, you know, they were struggling with it, but yet Hazel just looked at the situation and was like, you know what, like, there's nothing that I can do, and yet someone else here has this opportunity to do so, and they seem to know what they're doing. I'm going to at least let them try it. There's nothing, there's no other option. And this is probably the most appropriate way to take an uncertain time in an adventure, whether taking a certain pathway is the right way or taking the wrong, you know, whether you, when you're faced taking the good, the right or wrong path, being able to trust in the correct people is vital. So we see that Hazel, when Blackberry and Fiverr are trying to get Pipkin up onto the thing, he encourages them and lets them go on ahead. And then even still after it happened, he still had no real idea how that happened. Only Blackberry and Fiverr are the ones that are going to be able to remember. And this does come back up in the book, which I remember, but well, they're only the two that can remember it. Their cleverness. And so, you know, we in our own adventures with our own leaders, we can, you know, or if you are the leader, you know, you can take these and you can temper your own shortcomings and learn to really learn to trust the ones around you and to take in intuition. Even if it's like you're not leading or being led by anybody when you're alone in your own individual self, you can see how events can pile out and you can think of how and think things through better. You can really honestly see how these certain other paths or certain other ways, you know, work, and you can take those into your own self. You know, this book is really awesome because it feels like it's a story from ancient times, where almost like a Native American story, where you know, predating technology or advanced technology, but yet the setting, it blends with this modern era, even with the lore. You know, you think with the creation story and such, that some of these stories would take place hundreds of thousands of years ago, but yet, because these rabbits lead such short lives, the lore is old and transpired through the time, but it's all these stories are just intermingled with their modern context. So the story in this part one with the king's lettuce, it was called, there's a story of El Haraiha and his squad being trapped in an area. And then in order to get out, they had to trick the king to let them have his lettuce or steal his lettuce. And so what El Haraiha ends up doing is tricking him, tricking the king into thinking that the lettuce is poison. And so he dumps it out to kill off El Haraiha's people, the rabbits. And so, successfully tricking him into thinking like this, but yet if you really take into consideration that El Haraiha is supposed to be this ancient creature, why would farming practices really be there in one of the stories? And so it's just a really interesting way to interpret the world and to look at another aspect, and it brings a really kind of this little novel kind of I wouldn't say emotion, but it brings this not cutesy, but it brings on an interesting perception of the book and the stories and what's going on. You can take you could really honestly look at this story, and as you know, it does talk about guns and such, but If you were to take that out, you could honestly see the story being timeless, where no matter how long until, you know, there are no more rabbits, you know, there are, you know, it fits. And it's a really unique story in that way. And another thing is that humans, we're not dependent on a collective group as these rabbits are. You know, we can piece together lessons and teachings, you know, from one another and things like that. We don't necessarily need to be with one another, but yeah, we can also take lessons from this group thought and this group actions and preservation. You know, we tend to, you know, learn along our talents and our strengths, you know, and like Blackberry and Fiber to learn up on their own cleverness and such, you know, but, you know, and, you know, So like Blackberry and Fiber, they were able to learn through their cleverness. They weren't able to learn through Big Wig's, just do it. It's based off your physical strength and such. And so, and we can learn to work that way with the people around us in our own, you know, in our own things, where, you know, we can only really learn on things that we're at least moderately strong in. You know, we can't learn in something that's a weakness. So Fiverr trying to swim wouldn't work, but his cleverness and intuition of seeing, you know, intuition is cleverness of Blackberry paired together perfectly, so they were able to learn and remember. Hazel, you know, is probably the true mix of everybody, and is able to learn through everyone else's successes and learn through even his own forms of intuition and such. And it's really interesting through, so I don't know what exactly to call it, but like the farmer's warren, as I'll call it, there was no rabbit that led in particular. There was no chief rabbit there because they were all dying due to snares and slow, insidious ways. So they didn't need it, because the chief rabbit's job was to lead into safety and to lead into protection. And yet they're submitting themselves to being ensnared. And so, but what we could perceive as the lead rabbit, or at least the main character from that warren, was a rabbit named Cowslip. And so he was very apathetic and weird and quirky and very, I would say, deceiving and mischievous in his own way, but very passive. And so the whole time that they were in here and Fiber was begging them to leave, they were trying to learn for themselves. It was right. And they trusted it because it was safe and there was no obvious enemy. There was no obvious death. There was nothing that was going on that spooked them, in a normal way. But yet something that bugged all of them is that whenever a question of where something was, where somebody was, the rabbits of the farmer's warren would change the subject, would ignore them, would interrupt them. And so to add, you know, and adding in some bit of mystery, so to speak, and they couldn't quite crack it, but it was, you know, they figured it out that after they learned that there were snares because Bigwood got caught in one, was that because they were submitting, they didn't ever bring it up, because if they bring it up, they would be fearful and they wouldn't want to leave, but yet they don't want to leave. So they chose to be apathetic and ignorant of locations. And so, you know, and there's a lot of times in our life and adventures where we are withheld information, or where things are blocked up from other people, whether it's from jealousy, whether it's from, whether it's truly deception, or whether it's, just purely that, other instances, there's a lot of times that we're going to have to really look at the whole situation and try to find our way intuitively through it. And so where they should have trusted Fiber, it's also interesting that they didn't up until they were shown proof of what was going on. Because and this is something that I've learned and started to struggle with too. Like this even translate into my own marriage, where, you know, there's moments in my life where my wife is telling me over and over and over and over again that something's not good, somebody's not treating me well, or somebody's not this, somebody's not that, that somebody's lying to me. And I have no reason whatsoever to believe one way or the other that they're lying or that they're not lying. And so I get frozen, and I, you know, and I have tended to not trust my wife, but to let the situation play out. And it's very frustrating to her and frustrating to me as well, especially after, you know, learning that she's right. And there's so many times that she's right. And so it's very hard to understand and interpret which path is the right path, so to speak, and which action is the right action, and who is who. But there are many times that, especially when these rabbits are brand new on their own. And so just like us, brand new on our own in these adventures of life, whether it's a new job, whether it's a new area, whether it's a new profession, whether it's a new type of area we're going to live in, you're going to live in, or new people, new friends, new strangers, new neighbors, anything that's new and uncomfortable where you don't understand the culture and you don't understand people's intentions, it's very hard to really figure it out. And so, and this is something that, because it's very conflicting, like we shouldn't be making mistakes. You know, mistakes are bad, mistakes are this, and you know, you're going to get hurt, and we do get hurt by mistakes, and we do, you know, end up getting burned in ways. But a lot of times, and we don't talk, I mean, we don't talk about the importance of making mistakes. A lot of times we don't take in consideration that these lessons are very important, because from that point forward, you are stronger, you are better. We think of when we work out, you know, you break down these muscles and they build back up, you know, you're getting gains, getting swole, you know, you supplement other things in it. And it's exactly the same way with our mind, and making mistakes is breaking it down. It's so excruciating though, whether it's because it's the culture, whether it's because we've done it to ourselves, or whether it's truly a natural phenomenon to feel shame from a mistake, or to feel, you know, some sort of pain mentally or physically from a mistake, and that it paralyzes us, you know, instead of us looking at it and building off those strengths. So the example from these rabbits, they almost lost one of their key players, true, but they also learned a lot from it. Not only did they learn about the warren and about the mistakes and about the treachery and the peculiarities and just the death of the whole entire situation, and we're able to expose some of the questions of where and what and why, and learn to trust Fiverr more, but they also learned some valuable skills about how to evade reconcile a mistake, to save a life from the snare, and then they learned some more cunning. They learned how to work together better as a team, from how they took some of the wisdom of Bigwig, who was incapacitated and unable to help, and they also took the cleverness of Blackberry and were able to trust him and recognize that he was very clever, but also utilize their entire team, from Pipkin to Fiverr as well, to free Bigwig. And so, you know, that's extremely successful team building and teamwork. You know, and the things that, you know, I think every business or every group that, you know, needs a leader, or even military and stuff, would look at and be, that was the ideal way to handle an unfortunate situation and a mistake and a problem. But also, you know, that can translate into outside of teamwork. We are our own selves. We can look at our own selves and our own situations and learn how to take that problem solving even in our own self. You know, when we look at, you know, whether it's like writer's block, or whether it's, you know, we're a homesteader and a tree has fallen somewhere that we have to get around it. And, you know, and we can take experiences and take things from things that we've learned, and even in the moment experiences learned, where, you know, if the chainsaw breaks while you're, you know, breaking down the tree, you know, learning how to take the axe and to more strategically place the cuts to get it out of the way, and things like that. That's a lot of how this intuition and teamwork can, you know, play out. And so, I have really chewed through this much more than I thought I had. I mean, I'm okay. I didn't expect this to be 4 or 5 hours long, but it's very interesting. This book is very interesting. And another part of why I love this book so much is because there's a storytelling aspect. And so, and it's interesting that in almost every and this is as old as time. I mean, the fact that we are storytelling people and have oral traditions in the past leading to, you know, our fascination with podcasts, that in adventures a storyteller is so, or a bard, or whatever you want to call it, depending on your choice of words and titles, that storytelling and, you know, is such a vital tool in morale building, and the morale is even really a consideration. Even to take it in, and it's especially fascinating to take it into an aspect of an animal's perspective, where is morale even really a thing within animals? Is especially a group of animals, what, you know, maybe not insects necessarily of a hive mind, but, you know, giving rabbits personalities and identities and having them develop morale is such an interesting concept that's portrayed in this book, that rabbits even would need stories to explain the world around them and to teach lessons and things like that. And to think that maybe that does happen in a more instinctual sense, that, you know, not so much a human born narrative, you know, that, you know, it, we can, you know, yet, you know, we are kind of looking at it and kind of putting our own selves in it, but that it would make really, could truly make some sense that rabbits could think like, if rabbits could think like this, that this is how life could work. It's so fascinating to see that, you know, it truly is a natural thing to have storytelling, to have experiences retold, and to have lessons brought together, and even in fables, and even in, you know, anecdotes, fictional anecdotes, that, you know, that's one of the great ways that we learn and that we remember. You know, sometimes we don't learn from the telling of it, but we do remember from the remembrance of that story, where after we made the mistake, then we remember grandpa telling us, you know, don't do that with this tool or that weapon or whatever. You know, it's really fascinating. And, you know, intuition is really one of the most underrated tools, and one of the most, not abused, so to speak, of overuse, but abused in, what is the word, that I'm looking for? Abuse of dismissal, dismissing somebody's intuition based off of their stature or their position or anything like that. It's something that, you know, it's been in stories for so long as kind of a guiding lesson to trust into intuition, at least even a little bit. This is definitely not the first time it's been represented. We've all seen it in just about every classic tale, every classic story of, you know, where the strong, prideful leader, ignore the intuition and the counsel of the lesser person based off of their position, or based off because they lost trust in them, or anything like that. It's definitely one of the most reoccurring themes, especially in adventure. But I think that in this modern day and age, that where, what's the word I'm looking for again? The instant gratification age of Google, of these things where, you know, so a lot of our decisions and a lot of our things are based off of Google searches and a lot of other people's experiences, and that this is a vital tool that we have, especially in times of uncertainty. But I think that people tend to lose their intuition, and I think they also tend to rely on other people's intuition so much through technology and through this internet and such, that a lot of us especially have lost a lot of skill with it. I think a good example of it would probably be Google Maps. Would be that, you know, learning to navigate and learning to find your own path and to find the easiest, quickest path. Even though there are signs and things like that that would, you know, along the path would tell you what you're going the right direction and such, but, you know, so you'd still have to find your own path with a map or atlas. You know, and then, you know, after making a mistake, getting off the wrong exit, not having something that would hold your hand through it, you know, and you'd have to intuitively figure out that, you know, this kind of exit goes this way, this kind of exit goes this way. And having, especially if you weren't driving alone, have someone being the navigator, having a trust in them and trust in that intuition, you know, even though you are the driver and the one that has the power to turn left or turn right, to follow that sign in particular, but to trust in that person, you know, I think that's a skill that's lost. And I think that, not totally lost, I think that there's still a lot of things, especially when, like, you know, GPS does go down. I've had some experiences lately where I've tried to find my way through things to someone's house or find my way through a place in the woods and such. But, you know, and then I lost my map or I lost my capability of Google Maps. And based off of me studying the path ahead of time, just the smallest little bit and understanding some of the direction that I was going, I literally was able to intuitively think that, okay, I remember it being vaguely this far, in my destination is on this side of me, you know, and I took just one left turn and was able, I literally just found where I was supposed to be. I found it on my own, you know, without even maps or anything like that, but based off of just small little information that I was given and such. And I was really impressed with myself. It was really weird too. But, you know, and we still all have it in us. It's such an instinctual thing. And you know, we, in you know, and a lot of times in our city adventures, you know, whether or not we trust this person's directions or whether or not to approach this person or give this person money versus that person, and learning, you know, which people are trustworthy or not, even our own lives, you know, it's intuition still is a very important thing in our life. And we are losing it slowly and surely. And intuition and common sense kind of go hand in hand, where common sense sometimes is more of the group's understanding of an intuitive decision made long ago, whereas intuition is kind of the continuing process of finding that common sense. You know, and I think that we can take the examples of these rabbits like Hazel and Fiverr and Bigwig especially, and we can translate into those into our own leadership skills. And into learning to work with one another, and not just being the leader, but also being led, being able to trust your leader, being able to find the courage enough to speak out and to overcome your own anxiety and your own lack of position, and being able to tell your boss, you know, and you know, there's no way really to fix a bully or to overcome a bully, but being able to stand up for yourself and to have being able to just say that I did it. You know, all Fiverr, you know, and towards the end of part one, he was willing to abandon them. He was going to go to the hills on his own. He probably ended up dying, but he understood that, you know, he can't stay in this toxic place anymore. He can't be around these people that are choosing to be toxic, and he had to leave. It was very fortunate that they learned the mistake and that Bigwig was caught before he did. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, especially not to talk too much about my own job, but there's a lot of toxicity that lives and resides in my job in certain individuals, certain managers of other departments that I'm not in. And so I have yet to have desperately had to stand up for myself. But I've recognized positions where people have and where I may have needed to, or that I will, or that I may have to stand up for myself or I will do. And so, you know, just like Fiverr, he was standing up for himself. He's shouting people in. And he was just hitting a wall, hitting a brick wall. Even Hazel was discrediting him. That was the word I was looking for, discrediting him and tarnishing his reputation and tarnishing his intuition. Fiverr still held true and was able to stand up for himself and was able to counsel everyone, and based off of, and then after finding the facts, was able to connect the dots. And so a lot of times we, you know, we have intuitions, but yet because there's no proof, it's so hard for us to hold on to it. But yet we can. But we have to a lot of times, because usually when you drop it, it's usually when things hit the fan. But, you know, if you hold on to your intuition for long enough, the proof often ends up in there. Whether it, you know, your intuition is right or not, it just so happens that a lot of times Fiverr's intuition is correct. It's not always like that. Sometimes our intuition is wrong because we get muddled in our pride or get muddled in our own thoughts. But we need to learn to feel which intuition is right and which one's not. And so you still have to act like your intuition is right. You still have to go with your gut. And that's why a lot of times, you know, that's what you do. Even, you know, in my hunting experiences, me going my gut has led to some more failures than it has successes. But because I've kept trusting into it, I found some fantastic places, found some fantastic things along the way, found some fantastic lessons, and have met with success before. And I've done that my whole life and with other things. And so I think I can challenge each and every one of you to find something that, you know, in your job, in your next adventure, in how you are a leader or how you are being led, to understand who has the most and best intuition, and to be able to learn from them and to grow with them and to adopt that sense of your own and to develop on your own. I'm not telling everybody to shut their Google Maps off and just try to find their way with the iron in their nose and, you know, but You know, we can all learn to follow that guiding path one way or another, just in one small way. And so there is really nothing else along intuition that I would like to say or have an example so far, because I think I would just keep going on and on and on and on, kind of drilling in the point of just, I could find tons of examples of tons of sentences and quotes of it, but I think that I've gotten across what I want to say about intuition in this book. And I hope you guys enjoyed this. I really do. I really hope you enjoyed me telling it. And I know I'm kind of rough and, you know, had some positive moments here, but you know, I've taken some good time to understand this book and try to really put it into our own lives and things. And so if anybody's listening on this site, this app, you know, you can send me a voice message of something that you like, and I can give you guys a shout out. Even if you're on Instagram, I can give you a shout out for a thought and comment that you had. I'll read it out loud here and give you guys some feedback. You know, that's that with this, but, I'm going to move on from this. And so, I'm going to close this out now, but, like I've been saying, everybody, the podcast is alive. Recommendations are there. Go to potlessthoughts@gmail.com. Give me some suggestions. Give me some thoughts. Give me some things. Do it here. You can send me voice messages. You can send me a message on Instagram at, you know, it's Potless Thoughts. You'll find it. It's real easy. It's the only one for now. I'm thinking of deleting the Facebook. It's not a place that has been very successful for me, and I haven't put as much work into it. And I believe that the blog and the Instagram and email will do much better. And as always, and you know, I've been talking about a story this whole time, I've been talking about a book this whole time. I need you guys' story swaps. I need you guys to contribute to this. Okay. I need you to find a story that has you've either just learned something or it was one of your favorite stories. The main theme, of course, is adventure, and you know, whether it's outdoors or indoors or urban or anything like that. But you know, I want your story, you know, an adventure in love, the way that you met your wife, the, you know, the fun, quirky way that you and your brother learned to love one another after a fight, anything like that, anything. Adventure is such a broad theme, and we tend to put it into such a small little focus. I really need your guys' stories, so I'll submit them to potlessthoughts@gmail.com. That's where you're going to find the most success. You're going to see them on the blog as much as possible. If you're struggling with it and you struggle with writing, just let me know. Give me your story and I can help you. I can definitely help you. But I'm really encouraging you guys to send this and share this podcast with people. If you really like this, please tell people to come listen to it, at least to ramble to my deep soldier voice. That's a joke. But, you know, it's almost Halloween time. Things are getting spooky. you know, stay safe out there. A lot of stuff happens around Halloween as well. But other than that, guys, submit to the story swap. Submit some ideas. Keep listening, keep liking, keep sharing. I love the support everyone's been giving lately. So, and with that, I'm going to let you all enjoy your weekend. So, as always, do something noteworthy, even if it's only for yourself.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.